Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MPD Chief, No Specific Crime Pattern to Homicides Increase, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Police Chief Seth Herman said Tuesday that nothing points to a specific crime pattern when it comes to the increased number of criminal homicides in 2020 and 2021. The number of criminal homicides in 2021 is on pace to match 2020, which was the busiest year going back to 2008. The city reported the latest came Sunday when a person died after being stabbed outside Club Arriba. Miguel Angel Diaz Robles, 22, was being held Monday on a $250,000 bond for a first-degree felony charge of murder. That homicide brings the year total to 5. The one-a-month pace would be comparable to 2020 when there were 12 in Midland, according to Midland Police. The 5 this year already matched the total for the entire year in both 2019 and 2018. MPD reported on its website that there was an average of 4.3 criminal homicides a year from 2008 to 2019. There have been 3 fatal stabbings and 2 fatal shootings, according to MPD information compiled by the Reporter Telegram. 2 of the criminal homicides took place in March, and the others happened in January, April, and May. Other criminal homicide reported this year include an April 8th stabbing in the 4300 block of Pleasant Drive that killed 20-year-old Isaias S. Nunez. A 16-year-old male suspect later was charged with murder, according to MPD. A March 13th drive-by shooting in the 500 block of South Fort Worth that killed 53-year-old Gerardo Ramirez. A March 2nd stabbing of 39-year-old Corey Johnson. A juvenile male was arrested. A January 30th shooting outside El Mitote Sports Lounge, 1500 block of Rankin Highway, that killed 21-year-old Juan M. Anguiano. Herman said no educated theory exists for the higher number of criminal homicides. He said in 2020 there was no specific pattern of criminal activity such as drug trafficking, a common theme identified in previous years. It should be noted that the designation of homicide by the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program and National Incident-Based Reporting System requirement does not necessarily fit the common definition applied by the populace, Herman wrote. Herman added that in 2020, 2 were incidents that were ruled accidental, with no culpable intent to cause harm on the actor's part. 1 was identified as self-defense, where the deceased was killed during the commission of an offense. 4 of these homicides involved ex-spouses or estranged lovers against each other, and the other half of the relationship or new love interest. 1 was a drug deal gone bad. 1 centered on a shooting between rival biker gangs, a member of one group inadvertently shooting one of his own. 1 was committed by 2 members of an outlaw motorcycle gang, but against an unrelated individual at the behest and with the assistance of a 3rd actor whose intent was to acquire the victim's proper residence. 1 was the beating death of an infant by the father. 1 was attributed to the willful neglect of an infirm family member. The lone common thread among all of the events considered as homicides by societal standards is selfishness, Herman wrote. As for 2021, the evaluation is ongoing, but again, nothing thus far points to a specific crime pattern. This article is entitled, Council Discusses Adding Cultural Entertainment Districts, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council favorably discussed designated areas of downtown Midland as cultural or entertainment districts during a meeting last week. Establishing those districts would aid the city in revitalizing parts of downtown, stimulating economic development, and attracting tourists, Development Services Director Chuck Harrington said last Tuesday. Cultural districts are areas with a high number of cultural or arts facilities, while entertainment districts are areas where entertainment venues serve as the main attraction. A cultural district would be more difficult to create because an application would need to be submitted to and approved by the state, Harrington said. However, an entertainment district would only need a zone ordinance change from the council, he said. Some benefits of having an entertainment district include better signage for venues like neon signs, the ability for bars and other venues to play music louder than they would outside the district, and patrons being able to carry alcoholic beverages on the street as they walk from one venue to the next, council members said. The city would also have the option to create a public improvement district within the entertainment district to fund revitalization and other projects like improving alleyways, Harrington said. A public improvement district would establish a tax on property owners within the area for improvements and maintenance. A public improvement district would require approval from 50% of property owners, according to Harrington. An entertainment district could be created without establishing the public improvement district and property tax. Harrington said city staff considered that the boundary set for the downtown Midland Management District, which stretches from Front Avenue to Kansas Street, could be applied to an entertainment district, though the area might be too large. Staff also suggested a district could be created around Centennial Park, with boundaries set two or three blocks from the park in each direction. If either district is created, the city would also establish separate agencies to oversee each district. Any groups wanting to hold events or festivals in the area would then go through the corresponding agency rather than seek approval from the city council, Harrington said. Mayor Patrick Payton and Councilmember Lori Blong said they'd like to move forward with establishing an entertainment district soon, then possibly apply for the cultural district designation later. Councilmember John Norman said a cultural district could also be an opportunity to highlight the Hispanic communities within Midland. The city now is almost 60% Hispanic, he said. I feel like that should be more of a huge thing, bringing in that culture. Plans to establish an entertainment district were originally considered decades ago, but were delayed until a downtown park and convention center were finished, council members said. This article is entitled COVID Cases Down 26% in Midland County by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported less than 100 COVID-19 cases in Midland County last week. That was 26.8% drop week over week. The 71 cases that were the second fewest in a week since the beginning of April. The Health Department reported it was the first time in 4 weeks that numbers dipped below 100. Other highlights from the weekly report included: the number of active patients at Midland Memorial Hospital on Tuesday morning was 14, one more than May 11th. Five of those 14 were on ventilators. Midland Health also reported 43 positive tests last week, a decrease of 2 week over week, and a positivity rate of 9.1% at its testing centers. MISD reported 2 cases last week, the fewest since the week of spring break. The school district reported 13 cases in May. The Midland Health Department reported an overall case count of 17,614 inside Midland County during the pandemic. There have been 255 COVID-19 related deaths. This article is entitled Midlander Celebrates as Abbott Signs Daniel's Law by Stuart Doreen. Daniel's law is now the law of the land. Governor Greg Abbott signed House Bill 119 into law Tuesday. Also known as Daniel's law, House Bill 119 prohibits organ transplant recipient discrimination on the basis of certain disabilities. It will be effective on September 1st. Kathleen Kerwin Haney of Midland advocated for those with special needs to be able to receive life-saving organ transplants. She had previously told the Reporter-Telegram that her brother, Daniel, had been denied testing to be put on a donor list for a kidney because he had Down syndrome. Daniel died at the age of 46 from renal failure. Daniel Christopher Kerwin was always the hero of the Kerwin family, Kerwin Haney wrote Tuesday in a message to the Reporter-Telegram. Now, as HB 119, Daniel's law, becomes a reality, he will be a hero for all special needs individuals and their families throughout Texas. Special thanks to State Representative Brooks Landgraf, who believes our special needs friends and family members deserve more in our great state. Because of this legislation signed into law Tuesday, special needs individuals will have their fair chance at receiving life-saving organ transplants and can no longer be discriminated against based solely on their disability. Landgraf, an Odessa Republican, was one of four authors of Daniel's law, according to the Texas legislature online. Kerwin Haney said she plans to advocate for a similar law at the national level. This article is entitled Welcomed Rainfall. Storms rumbled through West Texas on Monday and Tuesday, dropping inches of rain in some areas. That activity was hit and miss, as no rain fell at Midland International Airport, but other areas reported rain, hail, and even tornadic activity. Rainfall totals through Tuesday midday included 1.5 inches in Snyder, 1.46 inches in Crane, 1.38 inches in Gale, and 0.7 inch in Big Spring. East of the Permian Basin reports from Monday and Tuesday included 2.23 inches in Abilene and 1.76 inches in Sweetwater. The National Weather Service in Midland calls for no chance of rain until Saturday, when a slight chance of rain returns to the forecast. A chance of precipitation remains in the forecast for Midland through at least Tuesday. This article was written by editor Stuart Doreen. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Mask Debate Didn't Deserve the Spotlight at Monday's MISD Meeting, by Stuart Doreen. A pretty cool thing happened Monday night. It showed us there is hope for Midland ISD and the decisions that the board can make. And I'm not talking about the decision to make masks optional. What many of you might have missed was a report that showed tremendous growth at the kindergarten and first grade levels. While many people were hitting the social media on masks and the liberation for students with less than 2 weeks left in the school year, Midland ISD showed double-digit percentage increases in both grades. The district reported that 50% of students in kindergarten began the 2021 school year reading on or above grade level. By April, that percentage had risen to 61%, an increase of 11 percentage points. First grade students began the year with 46% reading on or above grade level. By April, 58% of first grade students were reading on or above grade level, an increase of 12%. As Superintendent Angelica Ramsey said Monday, this was a year unlike any other. Don't we know that around here? But sometime around twice in the last 9 months, our community, our students, education in Midland, was blessed with decisions to bring in Ann Dixon and then Angelica Ramsey to bring students back to schools and to bring the focus of the district back to the classroom. How much did that matter? Over at Bonham Elementary, kindergarten students improved by 37 percent points from August to April. The improvement was 32 points at Franks, 26 points at Bush, and 23 points at Emerson. When it came to first grade students, Carver, of course, led the way, but there were gains elsewhere. Lamar improved 42 points, Sam Houston 40, Emerson 38, South 36, Burnett 28, and Bush 22. This is why I don't mind testing, because we see where we stand. We see what works. In this case, Midlanders saw two campuses inside Midland ISD improve by 20-plus points in both kindergarten and first grade, Emerson and Bush. Members of the community also saw that there are reasons to see the foundation is solid when the focus is back on the basics. Monday night, Ramsey stated that 6-point increase is statistically significant. And when one board member was wanting to know why a small group of schools that didn't show improvement, she was quick to state that it was important to recognize the hard work achieved by many more schools. We agree. These results also confirmed what Ramsey has said during her numerous meetings with MISD and community stakeholders. The pieces are already in place for the MISD turnaround. There is a reason Midlanders should be pleased about the board's decision about lifting the mask mandate on Monday. It is the same reason we should be pleased decisions were made about the renaming of Lee High School and the school calendar. It allows the board and this community to focus on academic achievement. That should be our top concern. Dixon and Ramsey both know this. We will see if the rest of us catch on. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. Elisa Navarrete. Elisa Navarrete lived a long, blessed life. She was on this earth for 92 years. During her lifetime, she was blessed with her husband, Narciso Navarrete, for 66 years. Together, they built a beautiful family, which included 6 children, many grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. A viewing will be held Wednesday, May 19th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Thursday, May 20th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Funeral service is set for Friday, May 21st at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine at 2 p.m. with burial to follow at Rest Haven North. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Richard Clifford Banks. R. Clifford Banks, known to friends and family alike as Buzzy, passed away peacefully in his home on May 11th at the age of 103. He was born in 1917 in Kansas City, Missouri, to Rufus Clifford Banks and Jessie Marie Odell. He met his first wife, Lucille Halsell Combs, in 1940, and they were married a few years later. After the war, they settled in Fort Worth, where his son Richard C. Banks was born in 1947, followed by his daughter Mary H. Banks in 1951. In 1952, Lucille and Buzzy were divorced. He reconnected with the also newly divorced Jean McIntyre, whom he had met during the war in California. In 1953, he married his beloved Jean and moved to Midland with her two children, Charles Gilbert and Ann Gilbert, to enter the newly booming oil industry. He is survived by his son, Richard Banks, Charles Gilbert, his daughter, Ann Gilbert Wiley, 7 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren. Jean McIntyre Banks and Mary Halsell Banks Leonard preceded him in death. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Midland Memorial Foundation. A celebration of R.C. Banks' life will be held on Thursday, May 27th at 10 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church, Midland, 800 West Texas Avenue, Midland, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Susan K. Smith. Susan K. Smith, 41, of Midland, passed away on May 4th in Lubbock. Celebration of life will be held 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 22nd, at the Branch at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Susan is survived by her children, Andrea Maylene Rodriguez and Mark Andrew Rodriguez. Her parents, Mark and Vicki Smith, and her sisters, Becky Beadle, Mary Miller, and Heather Lodes. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. Headlines: Proposed New Animal Shelter, $1.7 million under budget, by Frederico Martinez. The Odessa City Council made it clear that they were pleased that construction of a proposed new animal shelter is expected to cost $1.7 million less than originally expected during their Tuesday work session. But several council members were less supportive of Mayor Javier Hovind's suggestion that the city might be able to use the leftover funds to help pay for other infrastructure projects, such as renovating the city's aging water treatment plant. City officials have said the water plant project is expected to cost about $95 million. I think we need to be extremely cautious of redirecting funds so that it's not misperceived that we're trying to use the funds for something different than what was intended, Councilwoman Deidre White cautioned. White's warning came after several city administrators reminded council that the proposed new 20,538 square foot animal shelter would be paid for with funds from certificate of obligation bonds that council approved in 2019. The $10 million earmarked for the new animal shelter was part of an overall $93 million bond that is being used for other projects also, including a new fire station. Those project bond dollars can legally only be used for what they were originally planned for. In this case, a new animal shelter and fire station, Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services, Cindy Muncy, said. I'm simply trying to find ways to help pay for the water plant. There is nothing nefarious intended, said Hovian, who bristled at criticism directed at him by several council members. Police Chief Michael Gerke told council that the new animal shelter would cost $8,308,472 if the city hired Midland-based Onyx contractors to oversee the project. City officials originally projected the new facility would cost $10 million. Council is expected to approve the contract with Onyx during their May 25th council meeting. If approved by council, the new animal shelter would be constructed just east of the current shelter, Gerke said. Because of the current shelter's limited space, many dogs and cats that arrive have to be euthanized immediately because there isn't space to keep them separated from the rest of the animals, Gerke explained. A large, more modern facility would be able to house more cats and dogs and allow more adoption opportunities and provide better care for the animals, he said. On a separate item, Gerke reviewed city crime statistics for the past year. Overall crime has dropped significantly during the past year. Comparing statistics from January to May 2020 with the same period for 2021, Gerke noted that only the number of auto thefts rose from 3 to 5. Assaults have decreased from 282 reported cases in 2020 to 159 in 2021. Burglaries also have declined from 729 to 669. The number of murders decreased from 6 to 2 so far this year, he said. Violent crimes have continued to drop during the past year. Gerke said he credited the department's Get Tough strategy for the decrease. We went after those with guns who shouldn't have them, like felons, Gerke said. We targeted them hard and heavy. Training Ecosystem, Teacher Strategy in the Works by OA News at OAOA.com. The Permian Basin Partnership is working to establish a training ecosystem to address industry development needs. Molly Young, Director of Education and Workforce Initiatives for PSP, spoke about the initiative at the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin meeting Tuesday at the Region 18 Education Service Center. The gathering was held in person, but also over Zoom. Young said she is a proponent of systems alignment, in this case with kindergarten through 12th grade and post-secondary education. Called the PSP Catalyst Workforce Development Initiative, it will be led by the University of Texas at Austin Petroleum Extension at Cockrell School of Engineering and Petroskills. The initiative will aim to not only define industry benchmark skills and competencies required in today's Permian Basin job roles, but also identify suitable training providers available in the region that can be used to close common competency gaps experienced by those positions, material from the meeting said. A project kickoff meeting is set for 2 p.m. May 26th, the information said. University of Texas Permian Basin Dean of the College of Education, Larry Daniel, said Texas Tech University received a foundation grant. Jesse Mendez, Dean of the College of Education at Tech, reached out to the other three university deans. Daniel included and nine community colleges to have a two-day summit. Daniel said the subject will be the teacher shortages throughout the region from Lubbock out to El Paso. Probably no part of the community that is adequately served, so we've all got more work to do. But the idea is to talk about the need, present their statistics, talk about the good ideas we already have across all the institutions, and then determine how we can coordinate better, how we can build better articulation agreements, Daniel said. We have a great example of the OC to UTPB program that's worked incredibly well in our region, he added. Daniel said they want to hear the ideas and probably build an inter-institutional strategy. Education Partnership Executive Director Adrian Vega said the organization is being looked at to become part of Early Matters, an organization that focuses on the importance of early childhood education. The group also got an update on the Grow Our Own Action Network. The purpose of the network is to identify, align, and leverage community resources that lead to increased post-secondary success, workforce development, and stronger community. A couple of the data points showed that 75.9% of people over the age of 25 completed high school. This is according to census data. Nationally, it is 88%, and in Texas, it is 83.7%. The percentage of people who have attained an associate and bachelor's degree combined in Ector County is about 18%. In Texas, it is about 27%, and nationally, it's about 29%, a presentation from the meeting showed. Amy Anderson, director of the AVID program for Ector County ISD, said they served about 60 students this year in the middle school mentor coaching program at Bonham Middle School virtually this spring. The effort included 10 community coaches, 8 ECISD hosts, 5 ECISD substitutes, 20 students, and 6 sessions. The last session is today, and a drive-through celebration is planned for May 26th. ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray gave an update on the Permian Basin Education Leadership Summit held May 5th in Midland. The federal government has provided funds for public schools, and the meeting was to discuss ideas on how to best spend those funds over the next 3 years to address learning challenges. For ECISD alone, we could see $100 million, Murray said. A virtual follow-up meeting is set for June 3rd. A survey sent out to participants said they would like to continue the summits, Murray said. There is clearly a hunger for more conversations, he added. 473 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of the taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,328 total cases, 373 deaths. Midland County, 17,614 total cases, 271 deaths. Texas, 2,931,500 total cases, 50,972 deaths. U.S. cases, 32,795,780 total confirmed and 583,596 deaths. Find out more and where to get the vaccine at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Finally, from the front page, quick hits. CERC. Paranormal CERC has been scheduled at 7:30 p.m. today through Friday, 6:30 p.m., and 9:30 p.m. Saturday, and 5:30 p.m., and 9:30 p.m. Sunday at the south parking lot of the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. For tickets, visit tinyurl.com/JEAY9ZSJ. Summer camps. The University of Texas Permian Basin will be offering a variety of summer camps for youth, teens, and adults to the community this summer. There will be football, art, games, and programming, orchestra, choir, musical, XTO Energy, engineering camps, and more. To register or more information, visit tinyurl.com/Z65EZ7PS. Meeting. Discover Odessa has scheduled a tourism development meeting at 8:30 a.m. June 9th at MCM Elegante Hotel, 5200 East University Boulevard. Guest speaker will be Ramon Bersosa, President of USATF West Texas Association. Breakfast will be provided. To RSVP, email erica@discoverodessa.org. For more information, call 432-333-7871. NYT Podcast Producers. ECISD Live on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook at 7 p.m. Thursday will feature the New York Times podcast producers with EICSD staff members featured in the show. They will discuss the experience and what everyone learned. Dispose of bulky unwanted items for free. Citizens have the opportunity to legally dispose of bulky unwanted items for free. A bulk item drop-off center has been established at the city's recycling center, 814 West 42nd Street. Citizens can drop off unwanted bulky items Tuesday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. and on Saturdays between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. The Bulky Item Center is an opportunity for citizens to help keep Odessa clean and safe. Accepted items include electronics, furniture, appliances, mattresses, and other large items that do not fit in the dumpsters. Bulky items illegally dumped are dangerous and unsightly. Large items placed beside the dumpsters can prevent trucks from emptying the containers. For more information, call Solid Waste at 368-3509 or for Household Hazards Waste, call 368-3546. For a complete list of accepted items, go online. tinyurl.com/ub2xnsbk. Project Graduation, Safe Night by OA News at OAOA.com. Law enforcement will be out on the lookout the next 2 weekends for underage drinking parties and drug use. The operation will be held May 22nd, 28th, and 29th. Odessa Crime Stoppers will be teaming up with the Odessa Police Department, ECISD Police, ECHD Police, UTPB Police, and the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Law enforcement will increase its patrol this weekend in response to calls involving drug use and underage drinking parties. Any tips that result in a citation can result in a cash reward. These offenses include minor in possession, minor consuming, furnishing alcohol to minors, and social host accountability. Anyone with information in reference to any of the above listed offenses is encouraged to call Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. Police searching for woman connected to grocery store theft. OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a woman involved in a theft at a grocery store. The reported theft happened at 8:09 p.m. May 4th at the United Supermarket located at 1350 East 8th Street, an OPD press release stated. Investigation shows that a woman reportedly concealed $112 worth of merchandise inside of her purse and exited the store without making any attempt to pay. The woman left the scene in a gray Nissan Altima. OPD has released a photo of the woman that can be seen at tinyurl.com/2A5VYF5K. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Officer D. Morgan or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-9223. Odessa native graduates from U.S. Naval Academy from OA News at OAOA.com. Annapolis, Maryland. Gregory G.J. Nelson II of Odessa successfully completed 4 years of challenging academic, physical, and professional military training, graduating from the U.S. Naval Academy with a Bachelor of Science degree in Quantitative Economics and Chinese and a commission as a U.S. Marine Corps Second Lieutenant. He is a graduate of Permian High School. At the Academy, Nelson was a member of the track team, the Finance and Investment Club, the Midshipman Black Studies Club, and the Semper Fi Club. Founded in 1845, the United States Naval Academy today is a prestigious four-year service academy that prepares midshipmen morally, mentally, and physically to be professional officers in the Naval Service. More than 4,400 men and women representing every state in the U.S. and several foreign countries make up the student body known as the Brigade of Midshipmen. U.S. News and World Report has recognized the Naval Academy as a top 5 undergraduate engineer school and a top 20 best liberal arts college. Midshipmen learn from military and civilian instructors and participate in intercollegiate varsity sports and extracurricular activities. They also study subjects such as leadership, ethics, small arms, drill, seamanship and navigation, tactics, naval engineering and weapons, and military law. Upon graduation, midshipmen earn a Bachelor of Science degree in a choice of 25 different subject majors and go on to serve at least 5 years of exciting and rewarding service as commissioned officers in the U.S. Navy or U.S. Marine Corps. The Brigade of Midshipmen is comprised of approximately 4,400 students from every state in the Union. Each year, approximately 1,200 young men and women are admitted to the Naval Academy's incoming class. The Academy's alumni include one president, 21 members of Congress, 5 governors, 73 Medal of Honor recipients, 2 Nobel Prize winners, 52 astronauts, and 4,000 admirals and generals. Obituary. Vivian Annette Prophet, Odessa. Vivian Annette Prophet, 87, of Odessa, went to be with her Savior on Saturday, May 15, 2021, at Orchard Park Assistant Living and Memory Care. She was born December 31, 1933, to Robert Henry and Gladys Rogie in Sweetwater, Texas. She became a Christian at the age of 10. Upon graduating from Newman High School in Sweetwater in 1951, Vivian attended Hardin-Simmons University. She met her future husband, Garland Prophet, at the first HSU campus mixer that fall. She graduated from Hardin-Simmons in 1955. Garland and Vivian married on August 21, 1955, at First Baptist Church in Sweetwater, and moved to Odessa to begin their teaching careers. Vivian later continued her education by receiving her master's degree in early childhood from the University of Texas of the Permian Basin. She was an amazing teacher who worked tirelessly for 32 years to pour into her students. Vivian is survived by her 3 daughters, Kenna Hurley of Odessa, Jane Farley and her husband Darren of Midland, and Karen Forbes and her husband Scott of Odessa. She is survived by 7 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Vivian was preceded in death by her husband of 52 years, Garland W. Prophet, her 2 sisters, Lois Rogue and Mildred Rogie, and her grandson, Jordan Robert Forbes. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, May 19, 2021, at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, May 20, 2021, at First Baptist Church. Intermittent will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Memorials may be made to First Baptist Church Music Ministry, Permian Basin Mission Center, or nourishingthenations.org. Death Notices. Eufemio Munoz Alcantor, Odessa. Eufemio Munoz Alcantar, 90, of Odessa, died Wednesday, May 12, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. on Friday, May 21, 2021, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Odessa 2nd Section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Lawrence Thomas, L.T., Durrett, Jr. Odessa. Lawrence Thomas, L.T. Durrett, Jr., 83 of Odessa, died Sunday, May 9, 2021, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Saturday, May 22, 2021, at Calvary Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Vicki Jean Ford, Odessa. Vicki Jean Ford, 66, of Odessa, died Saturday, May 15, 2021, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Wednesday, May 19, 2021, at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acreage West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Romana Calici Nieto Hernandez, Odessa. Romana Calici Nieto Hernandez, 62 of Odessa, died Saturday, May 15, 2021, in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acreage West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jorge Hinosos Sr., Lubbock. Jorge Hinojos Sr., 67 of Odessa, Texas, died Monday, May 17, 2021, in Lubbock, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 11 a.m., May 20, 2021, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Maria Alabisa Sarabia, San Antonio. Maria Alabisa Sarabia, 72 of Fort Stockton, died Saturday, May 15, 2021, in San Antonio, Texas. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m., May 21, 2021, at Hope Alive Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Pamela Jan Whitmore, Allen, Texas. Pamela Jan Whitmore, 69 of Allen, Texas, died Monday, May 17, 2021 in Allen, Texas. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Thursday, May 20, 2021 at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. Section B, Health and Wellness. Practice positivity to increase the potential for happiness. Often in mental health counseling, clients say their goal for counseling is to be happy. When asked, how will you know when you are happy? How will you be different? They are stumped for a clear answer. Myths perpetrated by cultural markers, such as having the perfect marriage, the perfect job, wealth, children, or other self-imposed expectations, may suggest these are the components of happiness. If you want a happy brain, a positive outlook on life, perhaps practicing positivity could increase the potential for happiness. Here are a few suggestions. Look at a series of pictures and note your emotional response. Studies show that people who have happy brains respond more to positive things than negative or neutral ones. Look for pictures depicting positive situations. Good things happen all around you. Look for them. Misfortune can happen to all of us in various ways. Intentionally look for the positive lessons in each experience and hold on to those. if, as an adult, you have reached culturally confirmed markers for success, realize that this could be only a part of happiness. You must continue to grow as a person to reach a fulfilled life. Studies show that keeping a gratitude journal, laughing often, those crazy cat videos, and nurturing strong relationships are great ways to boost mood and feelings of happiness. Choose activities to train your brain to be happy. Some considerations could be quiet exercises, such as yoga or meditation, or physical exercises, such as walking in nature, or exercises to make your body healthier. Then there is the exercise of helping others, such as volunteering for a special project or for an ongoing commitment. Spend your money on meaningful activities that bring you closer to family and friends or that boost self-confidence. Share travel experiences, play board games, or make family meals special and routine. These experiences do not have to be elaborate or expensive. They only need to be meaningful for you. Age can make a difference in the experiences you choose. Be aware of the stage of your life. Younger people enjoy uncommon, extraordinary experiences, while older people may prefer simple, ordinary experiences that are deeply meaningful, such as enjoying a period of silence, simply holding hands. Happiness rarely knocks on your door. You must look for it and understand that your definition most likely will be different from any other definition. If Samaritan Counseling Center can be of assistance, please give us a call at 563-4144. Charmaine Caldwell, Samaritan Counseling Center. Calm Community Day. Photos by Tim Fisher, Reporter Telegram. City of Midland Aquatics held its Community Day last weekend, providing the opportunity for young and older Midlanders to sign up for activities and use Calm facilities. Older residents had the opportunity to purchase memberships, see and participate in classes available, and even check out specials for triathlon training. Children could participate in a pool party, take part in swim and dive team tryouts, sign up for camps, and see the summer opportunities at Calm Aquatics. City announces Aquatic Center's schedules. The City of Midland announced Tuesday it will open the Doug Russell Aquatic Center and Washington Family Aquatic Center on May 29th for the summer season. The hours of the pools are noon to 7 p.m. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for Doug Russell, noon to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday for Washington, 1 to 8 p.m. Sunday for both parks. Each day will be divided into two sessions according to the city. Session A will be from noon to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and Session B will be from 4 to 7 p.m. On Sundays, the pools will be divided into Session A from 1 to 4 p.m. and Session B 5 to 8 p.m. On family nights, Session B is extended to 9 p.m. Admission to the pools is $3 per session. Tickets for both sessions go on sale when the pools open for the day. Coolers can be brought into the pools for $10. Contents will be checked. No glass containers or alcohol is allowed. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division is taking reservations for private pool parties and pavilion rentals. Residents may book a party online at the City of Midland's webpage, https://parksrecreation.midlandtexas.gov/ WBWSC at the MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, or the Parks Office, 2701 West Elizabeth. Punch passes are available at the Parks Office and the MLK Community Center and will be available at the pools when they open. Prices for punch cards are $15 for 10 punches, $35 for 25 punches, and $75 for 75 punches. Dennis the Menace Splash Pad and the Splash Pad at Momentum Ballpark will also open May 29th for the summer season.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.